My Mac Podcast number 123. We've got an interview with independent film producer Tim Schultz, and Chad has a dead iPod.
Dead as a doornail.
The next generation of radio. It's the MyMac.com podcast.
And Chad and I did the interview earlier before we recorded this segment, but we're going to start the show off as we normally do with me, Tim Robertson.
And me, Chad Perry. And?
Oh, me, Guy Searle.
Me, Guy Searle.
Me, Guy Searle.
We like podcasting.
So I have to, first, let's start with Chad. Chad, your iPod is no more.
Yeah, the hard drive is gone. I've tried everything I can think of to get it back, to try to restore it, to try to access it, and nothing is working.
Of course, I get here and I sit down and I think, oh, let me see it. Give it here.
Yeah, no problem, man.
Me will look at it. Me fix it for you. Me smart with iPods and computer things.
I gave you the bizarro fix.
Yeah.
And drop it from high height.
You hit it hard.
Let hit ground.
Let hit ground. Bounce twice. Plug in computer. See if it works. If no work, use FireWire.
Yeah, it's dead. Yeah. You can literally hear the hard drive going.
Yep.
Now, which one is that?
This is a 4th gen 40 gig.
And she dad. It's probably because you put this fugly case on it.
Oh,
it probably
no.
Committed suicide. I mean, this is the ugliest case.
It is.
It doesn't even fit.
But I got
right.
I got it for like $5.
Well, you spent about $450
at a gas
too
station.
Much. Yeah. He spent $450 too much for
no,
it.
No, it was in the discount rack over at Circuit City.
Well,
I think,
nobody else wanted it. Yeah. Look at it. It's ugly. It looks like it should be on the handle of a hammer or something.
Or on a Zune.
You know,
well, right
do.
Now it is on the handle of a hammer because there's not much else I can do with that thing. Yeah.
You know, we could use this as a mod of some type.
I know, that's the first thing I thought about is that Tim's cigarette case mod.
No, you know what we could do? We can turn this into a cell phone. Somehow make this iPod into a cell phone. What do you think?
Oh my God.
That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, you know? We've got to figure out a way to do a mic on it, though.
Well, you just cut some holes in the back in the metal.
Is that all?
Yeah.
It could be pretty cool, because then you just hold up the iPod to your head and start talking. People are like, he's an artard. What's he doing?
Got an iPhone!
I said it's an iPhone.
I think you should cram a Mac Mini into it.
Yeah, that might be a little tight. I don't know.
we'll install Tiger on it.
Yeah. So we have a dead hard drive in the 4th generation iPod. You know what we could do? We could turn this into a shuffle case.
No.
And we'll just cut a little hole or a little slot at the top of it that you slide the new shuffle into it.
There you go.
Spring loaded. So it looks like you're using a full-size iPod, and you can have like 4 or 5 different shuffles that you can, and the shuffles themselves are the playlist.
Yeah.
Oh, and listen to rock.
No,
today.
I've actually been looking at options, and I can locally get a replacement hard drive for that for $189.
Yeah, but
40.
For that much money,
that much, I can go on to our former sponsor's website, iPod Photo. For the same price.
Yeah,
For not even much more money than that, you can get a brand new 5.5 30 gigger.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's for like another $50, heck.
Yeah, I don't think I would spend much money on this old one.
No, you know what I'm thinking, though? I want more storage space than on a shuffle, because I like having my podcast with me.
And it would be nice to get a better screen, too. Those color screens really do make a difference.
No, but what I might do is I might just pick up like a 10 or 15 gig hard drive for like $90, install it in there to replace the old 40 gig, and use that until the next video, the true video iPod comes out, and pick that up. Because I know we've talked about that in previous podcasts.
Yeah, that we all want the next generation iPod that's hopefully looks
like. So I'm not ready
to
go out and lay down a huge amount of scratch to replace it when I know that I'm going to get the next one when it comes out.
Yeah.
So.
Well, what might be even cooler is get out the video camera and blow it up.
Well, that would be a waste. If you know, eventually he if he does just want to fix this on the cheap and continue to use it, that'd be cool.
Because, dude, right, I'm serious. I miss it already.
Oh, I know what you mean.
Because I had podcasts that I was listening to that I wanted to get back to, and now I'm...
Yeah, that sucks. If mine died, I would just steal my wife's, even though she uses it every day.
Yeah.
I'd be like, honey, I have to use this. I'm sorry.
Now, I do have my wife's old first-gen Nano that she said I could... Or first-gen Shuffle that I could use.
Yeah.
But still...
Yeah, but you can't figure out which one it is, you know, what's going to come up next. You just end up hitting the next button until something comes up that you want to listen to.
You load it up every morning on the podcast that you want to listen to, put them in the order you want, sync it, take it with you. You know what's coming up. Yeah. Well, that still sucks, though.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry to hear that. So, have you guys been following the Apple TV? What's going on that front?
Yeah, I hear there's already been hacks posted.
Hacks? There's just all kinds of hacks. I think this is probably the most hackable thing that Apple really has ever released. I mean,
well, maybe
by design, do you think?
I gotta wonder. Apple didn't seem to make it too difficult to hack it. In fact, it is running Mac OS X.
Mm-hmm.
It's modified to work with the Apple TV. But I've already seen hacks that someone had pulled the OS off of the Apple TV, replaced just a few things, and turned a MacBook into an Apple TV. It is an Apple TV.
Hmm.
You hook it up to the network, and Safari and another computer sees it and thinks it's an Apple TV, even though it's a MacBook.
Great idea. Take a $1,200 device to replace a $300 device. Brilliant.
But you can go the other way around as well. You can put stuff on the Apple TV to turn it into more of a Mac.
Yeah.
I've seen people replacing the hard drives, going up to a 250-gig hard drive in it, which is...
It should have had in the first place.
Yeah.
I've seen people installing other software on it now, so it will play other movie formats.
Mm-hmm.
Although it won't from the Apple TV interface
itself. I heard that people are already putting DivX on there. Yep. So.
And I've also seen how people are hooking it up to an external USB hard drive and booting from the external hard drive. There's a certain combination that you have to hold down on the remote, and it will boot from an external hard drive.
Mm.
So, you know, I'm a little disappointed that the hard drive that comes in it is so paltry.
It's so small.
Which is one of the reasons that I've pretty much decided at this point not to get this first generation Apple TV. Because it really doesn't do anything for me.
Mm-hmm.
No. It's an extension of the iPod or iTunes.
It's like a small iPod for your television, really. That's kind of how I'm looking at it. I still think it looks cool. But one of the things that does concern me, and I've been reading a lot about this, is that it runs extremely hot. That one guy was measuring the heat. It was like 130 degrees.
Wow.
And that's hot, hot. That's way
centigrade.
Too hot. Yes. And, yeah.
No.
That's just extremely warm. I don't think I want something that's generating 130 watts of heat.
Sitting on top of your nice Oak Entertainment Center.
Yeah, that's not very inspiring.
Where does this Apple TV go? Oh, just put it on the black spot.
Yeah. Put it over here next to my table so when my coffee starts getting cool, I can just put it on there. Warm it up for me. One of the interesting things, and you're going to hear this review from Robert Hazerig here in a little bit, he reviewed the DLO iPod dock, which allows you to connect your iPod directly to your television.
Mm.
Cool.
And... honestly, you can get an iPod that has more capacity than the Apple TV, and providing that you don't have so much content in your iTunes that everything does fit in your iPod, you can just plug that in and watch it right there.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Apple TV is not playing high-def content either. And from what I see, it doesn't look like it's upscaling at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that would probably be a very viable solution. I've got a dock that does that already, that I can watch videos directly on my TV with that dock.
How's it look?
It looks, not too good, but I mean, I've got an HD set. But, you know, that being said, if I want to download a video iPod or video podcast, plug it into my TV and watch it there, it's a lot easier still to watch that than watch my iPod screen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more comfortable sitting on my couch than sitting in front of my computer watching a, you know, a 20-minute tiki bar or something like that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It just seems to me that I'm still unsure where the Apple TV is fitting into the whole product line. Who's really going to buy it? I think it's aimed for people just like us.
Right.
I don't think it's aimed for the general population.
You don't think it's a bridge product to something else?
I don't know. It seems kind of half-assed to me. It really does.
Well, you know, I think I think you're wrong,
Tim. Which would make me suspect even more it's a bridge product.
I think it is pretty much for the general public. It allows you from either a Mac or a PC to very easily take the contents of iTunes and put it on your TV set. And for a lot of people, that might be all they want. It's not what I would particularly want, but I don't watch that much TV anyway.
Now, you know, the iPod you can buy and download games for. I wonder if Apple has any kind of plans to add basic gaming functionality to the Apple TV. Not saying it would be a console video game like the 360 or the PS3 or the Wii.
It's a Pippin 2. Like,
yeah, exactly. Revenge of the Pippin.
Something that you could use. They could sell a Bluetooth controller, and then you could play like Pac-Man or Frogger mm-hmm. or Asteroid. You know, older type of simple games that would give it no problem, and it wouldn't
tax it.
Right, and that you can buy through the iTunes Music Store relatively cheap. Mm-hmm. You know, $5 to $10 tops. I think the market's a little saturated right now with video games, especially with older type of stuff. But it could be something that Apple's looking at because really. All it takes is a software update, and it could do it, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
It's just a stripped-down version, not even that stripped-down version of OS X.
Mm-hmm.
So it's more than capable of doing more than just playing games or playing music and videos.
Well, does the Apple TV have Bluetooth?
Yes. Isn't that how the... well, maybe not.
I thought that was RF. Isn't the remote RF?
It could be. I think it is RF. But even an RF controller, or even making the little remote control the game controller, left, right, up, down, fire. I mean, you'd have all those buttons already. How difficult would it be to play Pac-Man using that little remote? Wouldn't probably be the most comfortable, but...
Well, but that's the same way you play. That's the same way you play those games on iPods as well.
Right, but I personally hate to play any games on the iPod, and I've bought a few now, and I've tried them, and it just stinks. It's not a good...
You hate them all.
I do. It's just not a good system to play games on. It's not intuitive. The screen is, and I don't like the scroll wheel. The scroll wheel is just probably the most cumbersome video game interface that I've ever used. But I'm kind of curious on what other people think. Anybody listen to this podcast? What do you think the Apple TV needs? What do you think it does really well? Do you have one? What do you think about it? I'm kind of interested. So. I'm not buying one. I know I said I wanted one, but now that it's out, now that it's not shiny, fresh, new to me, and I'm seeing pictures of it, and I see the interface, and I've seen people rip it apart, and I see people hacking it, I've lost a little bit of that I-gotta-have-it thing. I really have. It's just kind of okay. It's not offering me anything that I don't already have the ability to do.
Right.
You know? Do you have a need for it, Guy?
No. I don't even have a high-definition television, so what would be the point?
It has been established, though, that you can hook it up to a non-high-definition television.
Yeah, as long as it has component video.
Right.
I don't know. You know, I don't have, other than Battlestar Galactica and Heroes, I don't really have that much video content in iTunes.
I was thinking, and I've already seen this, a lot of people are actually kind of taking the whole... Apple TV thing and turning Mac Minis into that.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a Mac Mini and I did that project in the past. We talked about it, a year and a half ago on the podcast where I connected it to my television. I had a wireless keyboard and mouse and it didn't look very good to me.
But that was the G4 though, right?
Well, yeah, but still. I mean, it was, what am I going to do? Am I going to download movies from the internet, put them on that machine and watch it that way?
When you have an upscalable DVD that'll...
Right, and I get a Netflix subscription and... it's just, I don't know. I like the idea of being able to download movies and watch them when you want to. My problem is, number one, I don't have a whole lot of time to sit there and watch movies. Like I said, I have a Netflix account, but I don't watch 3 movies when they come in. I get them, I do something to them, and I send them right back. I should say I do something with them. Just,
you could leave that out.
Yeah.
Yeah, you watch them.
Eventually.
You consume them. Let's just say that.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes a tasty movie sandwich.
And, you know, so then I watch them when I want to watch them, when it's convenient for me. And, by the way, I have all the Justice League. No, Guy, I'll have to remind you of that sometime.
Yeah. We'll talk about that offline.
But I don't know. I the luster of the Apple TV is kind of worn off for me. It doesn't seem to be that exciting now.
Mm-hmm.
So what else is going on in the Mac world right now?
What's new?
I saw that Apple updated QuickTime or iTunes, but that was last week.
Yep.
And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, there was another update today, and that was the airport base station update.
Oh, there was an airport base station update?
Yeah, but I
did not know that.
Yep, and I don't know which one it's for. I think it's for all of the base stations, isn't it? We can check. Yeah, it just says Apple Airport Base Station.
Yep.
Now, is that software for the base station or software for your computer to work with it better?
The latter. It comes with the new airport utility, airport administration utility for graphite and snow base stations, airport's disk utility, and airport's disk agent. So I'm going to have to go home and download it myself.
Well, what if you have the new Airport Extreme?
I got to imagine it probably works with that, too. It doesn't specifically say it in the press release that I got, but did you see that new feature that Apple released for iTunes called Complete My Album?
Yes.
Yes, I did see that.
What do you think?
Well, I don't know. Typically, if I'm buying singles, there's a reason why I'm buying singles instead of the whole album.
Thank you.
Yep. Usually because the rest of the content on the CD or whatever sucks. So all I want is that one song.
Yeah, but what happens if you buy two songs from a group and you end up really liking it more than you thought you were going to, and now you do want that album? Well, the way it was before, you had to pay $9.99 for the whole album. And,
yeah.
You know.
Regardless of how many singles you had.
Right. Right. With this, you have the option. You only pay
for whatever's left.
Well, only I think up to 6 months after you purchase a single, you can do that.
The other big news of the week from Apple was a update to what? What was the other update to? Boot camp.
Yeah, boot camp.
Sorry, I just
Vista support.
Yeah, Vista support was added, and between the three of us, I'm probably the only one who's downloaded and installed that so far. And yeah. I gotta say, Vista seems the same. It's
what a great update that is.
But the keyboard works better now. It does really? Eject discs from the eject key. The sound works. The sound buttons.
Mm-hmm.
It joined my network a lot faster than it did before. So it seems like it was all the drivers that Apple but it did come back with some errors. Said this is not working and this is not working. And I didn't have it. Said eyesight wasn't working. And I haven't spent the time to go in and really play with it yet. Yeah. So,
well, it wasn't working before either, was it?
No, but if Apple releases it, an update to Boot Camp, and it says it makes it work, and it doesn't, that's kind of
that's a bad thing.
That's not a good thing, no. So we that's got a lot of. So what do you got, Guy? What's going on in the Guy Searle household right now? What new Mac stuff are you looking at?
Well, I did actually purchase something. I had the weekend show with the Washington Apple Pie, which I'm still editing the audio. That's going to take some time.
Uh-huh.
And that was right over by the Tyson's Corner area, so when I got done there, I scooted over to the Apple store there at Tyson's Corner and started looking around. And you know, there at the time, there wasn't really too much new that I was interested in. But I did start looking at the new Apple Airport Extreme, the 802.11n. And what really kind of had me wanting this was once I heard that you can hook up a USB drive and kind of use it as a NAS, you can even put a USB hub on it and hook up multiple devices, and
right.
It'll all be network accessible.
Very cool.
So, yeah, I went ahead and bought it.
You did?
Yes, I did. $179 bones.
So, was it what you thought it would be?
Yeah, it was. It was very, very easy to set up. I had a, and I should preface this by saying what I had before was a was an older Linksys 802.11b router,
mm-hmm.
and the three machines I have coming off of course, is the 24-inch iMac here,
right.
my kid's 17-inch G5 iMac, and my 933 G4 iBook,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, the iMac is, the G5 iMac is running as a G, and the iBook is running as a B. And it would take, you know, because typically what I'll end up doing is I'll download Battlestar Galactica episodes from iTunes, and they're usually around 450 megs, and then after I watch it on the iBook, I'll transfer it, and it takes some time, you know, transfer it wirelessly down here to my to the main machine, and it would take, you know, 20 to 25 minutes for that 450 megs to download, you know, wirelessly. Put in the N router, it was like 5-6 minutes.
Wow, that's a significant improvement.
Wow. Yeah, and even surfing the net on a B device like the iBook or a G device like the kid's G5 iMac. I've seen, you know, and I haven't timed it or anything, but there is a significant difference, and it is much faster.
And you, I take it you're getting it's going a lot farther as well, right? Or have you not really tested that?
I haven't really tested that. I used to use, when I had the Linksys B router, I'd go into the backyard. We had one of those little swing seats out there.
Yeah.
And I would sit out there every once in a while when the weather was nice and just kind of surf the net on the iBook. And it wasn't bad. It was a little bit, you know, I wouldn't get as many bars as I typically would. And I should probably go ahead and give that a try as well.
With they got the, those little transceivers that you can buy for your base station that bumps it up to like 1 watt. That would be awesome.
Mm.
I can go grocery shopping and still browsing the internet with my home connection. That would be cool.
Now it's worth it having a Skype phone.
Yeah. Well, what you need to do, Tim, is really, really crank it up, and that way, the next time you do a show at the Grand Rapids Apple Store, you can still connect to your home network.
There you go. That would make it a lot easier. So some of the new stuff up at MyMac.com right now, Donnie Yankolo has a Macspiration up there talking about alternatives to Apple Mail. I know not everybody is a fan of either Apple's mail program or Microsoft's Entourage, so check that out if you are interested in changing up some email program. He also did a review of a Magna Studio EX 3.0. It's kind of a middle-of-the-road review as far as the score goes.
So you give
it a 3 out of 5. If you want to find out why, check it out. Bakari review the Turbocharge Your Computer, a Life Hacker book.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty interesting. But the big news for us this week was from John Nemirovsky. He had a first look at Adobe CS3.
Wow.
From the briefing that he held at the Macworld Expo. So he's been sitting on this information for quite a while. It was under embargo.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, any other website that had information that you have to sign a NDA
for,
right.
He had to sit on it. And so did I, because I read his stuff before anybody else. And I was like, oh, I can't wait to post this.
I want to put this online now.
We will be doing the reviews of Adobe CS3. They're sending us some review copies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking forward to playing with it.
Yeah.
It looks like it really will take advantage of a Mac Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I'm going to be doing my review on a G5, most likely. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. I'm looking forward to it. Not a whole lot else going on at the moment. One of the changes that we do have up on the website is that you can listen to this podcast directly in your web browser via the audio flash player that we're embedding right on the main page. You just hit the play button and boom, it's playing right there.
And that's how I'll be listening to it until I fix my iPod. Thank God he thought ahead. Thank you, Tim.
Yeah, well, I knew it was coming up.
Well, you just need to put one of those antennas on your Airport Extreme so that you can get it as you go to work.
Yeah, just take your laptop with you and drive all the way in. That would be awesome. Let's see, up over on the blog side, Larry Grinnell, you know that guy, don't you, Guy?
Yeah, I've heard of him somewhere.
I'm really, really digging his musical blog posts. This one is Joe Pass, a reluctant guitar hero.
Mm-hmm.
But check out Larry's archives if you're interested in old blues music and guitarists.
And jazz.
And jazz. He has some really great stuff posted.
He's very, very knowledgeable on
the subject. Yeah, he should almost write a book, I think. I was talking to Bill Palmer via iChat the other night, and he was telling him he was in this restaurant, and he was like, man, my waitress don't know who the Who is. And I was like, no way. And he was like, I feel so old that she doesn't know who the Who is. Mm-hmm. Who the Who is. Yeah, who, that's right.
Right.
Who are you? And he put a blog post up about that. That was pretty interesting. And there's a lot of other stuff. Check it out.
Yep.
And I think that's going to wrap it up for us. John Nemo's coming up next, and he's got an interview with Mary Plummer. And thanks for listening.
Welcome to another episode of Book Bites Live here on the MyMac.com podcast. And as you know, we do use GarageBand version 3 to record one of the audio tracks and then eventually to combine the audio tracks. And the very best book of all time on GarageBand 3 was written by Mary Plummer. Is that how you pronounce your last name, Mary?
That is correct.
Very good. It's Mary, P-L-U-M-M-E-R. The book is GarageBand 3, Create and Record Music on a Mac, part of the Apple Training Series. It comes with DVD-ROM with lessons and media files. The cost in the United States is $40. In Canada, it's $54, and it's £29 in the United Kingdom. We have no idea what's going to happen with any updated versions of GarageBand or iLife or Leopard. But for right now, this is the book. This is the best book that I can recommend for using and learning GarageBand. How do you develop, Mary Plummer, your detailed lessons, such as these fantastic lessons and questions and answers and projects and DVDs, assignments? How do you develop this stuff in your GarageBand 3 book?
Well, good question. I think anytime I get a hold of software, I mean, I'm a user first. I'm a creative person. I'm a professional in the industries. Television, film, music. And so before I write a book, I mean, first thing I do when I get a hold of software is I put it to work. I use it. I push the limits. I try to find out what can I do with this software. And then when I'm developing a book, I look at, okay, what do I want to show and what are some real world type projects that might work well for showing those type of features. So I try to tie it in as closely as possible to what a real world workflow would be and things that I would actually be doing.
Well, I mean, sounds simple enough, but is each lesson created on its own, or do you sort of attack them all at once? I mean, how do you actually develop a massive book that's going to be turned into an Apple Training Series official Apple certified volume?
Interesting. You know, I spend time, whether it was like the GarageBand book, the soundtrack book, the motion book, any of the books that I'm working on. I mean, I go through a lot of trouble finding projects that I find that I would want to do, things that are exciting. A lot of the people that we train come from very interesting, diverse backgrounds and have projects that I think might be very cool for a book. And I'll ask them, hey, by the way, you know, I might have a book coming up. You know, are you interested in having us use some of your footage in one of the books? And so I'm always looking for something very cool that might work. And then it's just about finding enough diversity in the projects that, you know, anybody might be interested. Maybe they wouldn't be interested in all the projects in whole, but there was something they can identify with.
Then how do you create those dedicated lesson files that are on the accompanying disc that's included with the book?
I just basically, same thing. I build a project and then I tear it apart. You know, I build something, you know, if I'm doing a musical score, if I'm recording it, I record it as if I'm scoring a movie as I would for anything else. And then I say, okay, now, except I'll do it in GarageBand. And then I figure out, okay, which parts of this would work for showing how to change tempo, which things might work for whatever it is that we're trying to show in that lesson. And I find ways of, using them as examples. And then I try to include the entire project and all the different steps along the way on the DVD.
But do readers need to go through this book, GarageBand 3, Create and Record Music on a Mac? Do readers need to go through the entire book in order, chapter by chapter, to learn from all the wisdom and all these incredible lessons and screenshots and audio files?
Well, I think, you know, it's designed because I do train people in a classroom environment sometimes. Sometimes we go to do on-site training where we actually show up at a TV station or somewhere and work with people as individuals or as a company. I think, you know, the books are laid out in such a way that each chapter builds on itself, on the next one. And so if you, basically the way it's laid out is each chapter builds on to what you learned from the last chapter.
Right.
And so basically what we would do is, if someone wanted to jump around, I also have that in mind. I know that some people get in there and all they want to know about is podcasting. And so I made sure that that chapter had enough of the information in it that they could jump right to that and still get through it without any problems. I repeated enough things or pointed them in the right direction to catch up. Same thing with the movie scoring. Even though that was toward the end of the book, I made sure that if someone jumped in, because that's really what they wanted to do, they'd be able to get through that without necessarily waiting through the entire book. But I always recommend starting at the beginning, because that's where you're going to get all those little details and things that you may not find in the documentation for GarageBand, but are in the lessons and kind of unfold as the chapter unfolds.
Okay, that's fair enough. But if somebody's a podcaster or an instrumentalist or a singer or wants to create a complex audio arrangement, how long would you say it takes to become comfortable with GarageBand 3 for users' personal creativity projects?
You know, that's a great question. I think it's everybody's learning curve is a little different, but I think, you know, if it's someone who's always been a musician, who's always worked with like acoustic instruments, who's really not familiar at all with a computer, it's going to take them a little bit longer just because they're not used to working with a mouse and a computer to do something, you know, for recording, or maybe they're used to just hardware and buttons. I think they pick it up fairly quickly. I think obviously there's some people who use a lot of software are going to find this incredibly simple because it was made, so much of it's done under the hood instead of the user having to figure it out.
Right.
GarageBand does it for them. Whereas, you know, sometimes in the pro apps you can do something similar, but you have a lot more steps to do it.
So. Yeah, well, that's certainly the case. What are your personal hardware choices, Mary Plummer, for the hardware and accessories that you use to record and mix digital audio files?
Well, let's see. I use, when I'm bringing in microphones, for example, like the microphone I'm using now, since it has an XLR input, I like to use the Edirol's FA-101 because it's got 10 ins and 10 outs and basically covers just about anything I need. And it's a FireWire interface. So that's very handy for me. And there's a lot of different devices out there. This one has just always worked out, so I haven't really needed to get another device for that. I have an Edirol keyboard. I have an old, I have a lot, several old keyboards from my past when I used to play in several bands in college and different things like that. And all of those I can interface just by using several different devices for, you know, just to be able to go MIDI to USB, basically converters. Nothing fancy for those, just a cable. Let's see, what else do I use? I do use the Snowball microphone sometimes for just simple podcasts or just voiceover type things. If it's you know, something simple going to the web, I'm trying to think. I use the iControl occasionally if I am working with a lot of different tracks, because I can easily mute and record and enable and different things, and it helps me coordinate if I have several people that I'm talking to at one time or different musicians that I might be recording.
So it's not that different from what a home user or somebody getting started would do. You don't necessarily need to have a $10,000 studio in order to have high-class results.
Not at all. And in fact, I that's one of the things that gets so exciting about this is I find there's people who wade through, you know, or want to spend a ton of money on equipment and everything. Especially I work with some new bands and different people who really don't have that kind of money. And I always tell them, I said, you know, get the instruments you need to work with, practice, and you know, record your stuff in GarageBand. Get used to recording tracks and adding music, and the quality of some of the instruments that come built into GarageBand or that you can add are just amazing. I mean, compared to what we used to work with, it's incredible.
Well, I certainly know about that. You've mentioned working with bands. You've mentioned working in the recording studio, scoring, composing. I mean, you seem to have a lot of things going on. What is your real job? Tell us about your composing credits and where you teach, and tell us a little bit about Mary Plummer.
Oh, gosh. Well, I'm the co-owner of a company, Envision Digital and Media Arts, and we're an Apple-authorized training center located at Universal Studios, Florida. So we have our classroom there, which is great. I love working with people. We train in the Pro Applications Final Cut Pro and DVD Studio Pro and the entire Final Cut Studio, as well as I work with musicians and different people who are, you know, as an advisor or a consultant or just helping getting them up to speed where they're trying to make that leap into, okay, now I want to use a computer to record. how do I do it? What do we do? Where do we start? And that's always fun. I'm still a working editor. I still do projects. I still write music and record when I can. You know, it's a juggling act. And I've been very, very fortunate in my life. I've been freelance my entire career that I'm able to, you know, be an author, write sometimes about things that I'm very excited about and that I'm using. I get to work with music. And I also get to edit on films and TV shows and documentaries and things like that. And it just, I'm able to wear different hats and kind of balance things.
Well, it's pretty impressive. We're going to have to learn more about Mary Plummer. And once again, that book is GarageBand 3, Create and Record Music on a Mac, part of the Apple Training Series. Publisher is Peach Pit Press, and you are listening to Book Bites Live here on the MyMac.com podcast. Well, to wrap it up, Mary, what is the URL or website we can learn more about you and the courses you teach and perhaps some of your composing and music credits?
Our URL is Envision Digital.
And we'll put that on our show notes, Envision Digital. Don't worry, I don't need to spell it. You'll have it on our website at MyMac.com.
Okay, and then as far as credits, gosh, I scored a lot of different indie projects when I was in California, and one of my albums that I produced or was produced while I was in California also was, we did the mastering at A&M Studios, which was nice. It was just my recording credits, I used my initials, M.K. Plummer.
M.K.P.L.U.M.M.E.R. So if somebody wants to get the dirt on you and listen to some of your audio tracks, we can track you down using the miracle of M.K. Plummer search on the internet.
That is correct.
Very good. Well, any parting words to the readers and listeners of MyMac.com and the Book Bites Live podcast, summing up the excellent work you've done and the high rating we've given to your GarageBand 3 book? Any tips you want to give us for GarageBand 3 or just to help us in general get started with digital audio recording?
My biggest thing is dive in. Just don't be afraid. I think the biggest thing people have a problem with is they want it to be perfect and they want to record something perfect. And so they're so worried about getting the music and getting it down exactly right that they don't just let it flow. And they just, you know, treat GarageBand like a tape recorder, or like it can be as simple as just laying in your temp tracks or something. When you have a little ditty in your head, hook up a microphone and hum it in, or if you want to play something on your guitar or just roughen a song. And you can always tweak it later, you can always re-record it, but at least it's in there and it's something you can always build on and add to later. But, you know, the human brain is not a great storage medium. So when there's great ideas come, just try it out. See how it works. It's not that hard to get into it. And then build your songs and work with it. And the more you work with it, the better and easier it gets.
Well, thank you so much, Mary. Whenever, when, and if GarageBand 4 or whatever it happens to be called with iLife 07 or 8 or 09, whatever it's called that comes out this year or next year, we're certainly going to track you down again. And hopefully you'll have a book that's as good as this one or better, because we give this our highest recommendation at Book Bites Live on the MyMac.com podcast. Thanks for joining us, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you.
Hello, Robert Hazelrig here. Today I'd like to talk to you about DLO's Home Doc Deluxe. The Home Doc Deluxe is a great alternative to Apple's Apple TV. The Home Doc Deluxe is about twice the size of a standard dock, and it comes with a remote control and a set of cables to connect the dock to your television. It has several ports in the back, including three standard RCA red, yellow, and white jacks that plug into most standard televisions. It also has S-Video out. It has a power cable on the back for charging the iPod while your iPod's in the dock. And, of course, it has a USB connection port in the back in case you want to synchronize it to your computer. The interface is very simple and easy to use. It even comes with some settings that will allow you to change it to the color of your choice. If you like, you can set it to display the album art, or you can set it to fade to black after a certain amount of time. Dock itself has an adjustable support that allows you to use the Home Dock Deluxe with any dock connecting iPod. So, what kind of quality do you get out of the Home Dock Deluxe? I was very pleased and very impressed with the imagery that was being displayed on my TV. Now, I don't have a high definition, high resolution television at home. I tested the Home Dock Deluxe with my 60-inch rear projection television as well as my standard 27-inch Sony Trinitron. In both instances, the picture quality was more than adequate. And in my opinion, when I compare that to the video quality on the Apple TV, I actually prefer the Home Dock Deluxe. Granted, you don't get to stream your content from your computer to your television, but it really isn't all that difficult to synchronize your iPod with your iTunes and then walk it into the other room and snap it down onto the Home Dock Deluxe. The real benefit the Home Dock Deluxe offers over Apple TV, though, however, is the price. The Home Dock Deluxe retails for about $150. That's a big cost savings. Even before you factor in the fact that if you're using Apple TV, you have to shell out a whole bunch of money for a high-definition television. Aside from moving my content manually with my iPod, syncing it from my computer and then walking it into the next room, the only real issue I had, and it was a minor one with the Home Dock Deluxe, was the remote control could sometimes be somewhat unresponsive. A few times when I was trying to get out of a video, I was playing a video and wanted to back out to the menu, I had to hit the menu button several times before the video would actually stop and then back out into the menu. To me, this was a very trivial annoyance, but an annoyance nonetheless. Overall, I am very satisfied with the DLO Home Dock Deluxe, and on a scale from 1 to 5, I would rate it a 4. Well, that's it for me this week. DLO's Home Dock Deluxe. This has been Robert Hazelrig. Thanks for listening.
And we're here with Tim Schultz from BullheadEntertainment.com, Bullhead Entertainment Studios as well. Tim, what is your position there?
I'm actually a producer, executive producer of a film that we're doing right now called Chasing the Shadows. It's a ghost film. Basically, I also play an on-camera role. It's kind of a first-person film following my journey to try to seek out communication with the deceased. So it's about ghosts. And
You're not playing the Shaggy or the Scooby role, right?
No, not in this one. yeah.
Well, I found it interesting. I saw it was on another subject, but I was watching the Discovery Channel, and they showed a little bit about Tim on this program, and I noticed that he had started his own movie studio. And, of course, being the astute Macintosh and Apple observer that I am, I noticed some Macs in the background, and I went, hey. So I sent him an email. I said, hey, would you be interested in coming on the show and talking a little bit about the movie and production and all that kind of stuff? Because we hear Mac fans, Apple fans, we hear all the time about studios and independent publishers and stuff like that using Macintosh and Apple products to make their films. But I thought, you know what? We don't hear from those people a lot. So,
yeah.
Hey, let's send this email invite out to Tim. Yeah. And we really appreciate coming on.
Yeah, no, it's great to be here. Thanks a lot for the invite.
So, obviously, the money situation wasn't a worry on what equipment that you needed, that you wanted. What made you go with the Apple stuff?
Well, you know, it seems to be some of the most professional products you can get for editing film. You know, in this day and age, you can just, you know, get Final Cut Pro or Motion or some of these great programs and fairly easily edit a very professional product. And you know, it just seems like the way to go. I've worked with some very professional, prominent editors in the field, and, you know, I've also done some stuff with news as well. And, you know, time and time again, Apple seems like it's one of the best, you know, Final Cut is one of the best programs to be used for editing, I think, in my personal opinion.
So you are using Final Cut Pro for editing of the film?
Yeah, we sure are. We sure are.
How many people actually work on the film and editing?
Right now, I think there's about 3 people. I've done some stuff myself, but, you know, it's mainly one editor, but we have different people edit different things. You know, some people edit things for the website, and somebody helped out with the trailer, so.
What's the biggest challenge on working with the Final Cut Pro? Is it a steep learning curve, in your opinion, or was it pretty much get up and running, or did you kind of take knowledge from previous versions or previous software that you've used in the past and applied it to Final Cut Pro? How does that work?
I didn't think it was that difficult to learn. You just takes a little bit of time, just like anything else. But I actually learned Final Cut a few years ago when I was in college. That's what they used at the University of Colorado in their journalism department. And so to me, it came pretty easy. And now that they have this film that we're doing is in high definition, so we're using the upgraded HD version.
Now, for those of our listeners who haven't been out to your website, Chasing the Shadows is a documentary film, correct?
Yes. Yeah, it sure is. It's an independent documentary. Basically, I'm financing it myself so far. The TLC show... I'm not sure if this was mentioned earlier, but the TLC show was about on lottery winners, and I won the lottery, and that's basically how I'm able to pay for this film. But you can do it fairly cheaply, and that's
now. See, you're kind of in the situation that I think I would be in if I was fortunate enough to win the lotto. A lot of people think, oh, I would just not work or do anything. I would just retire to the Bahamas. Well, that's not me, and obviously that wasn't you either.
Yeah.
Maybe it has something to do with the Tim name.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good name.
But you wanted to, it allowed you to do what you wanted to do, and in this case it was make films. Now, is it the supernatural aspect of this particular film that it drew you into making films, or the broader sense of making movies?
Definitely the broader sense of making movies. You know, I just like to entertain people and be as creative as possible, and that's my dreams. And now I have the ability. Well, I think first of all, you know, I think anybody can achieve their dreams and pursue their dreams. I just got kind of a boost with the lottery thing, and I just feel very fortunate.
Well, it allowed you to do what you want to do, which is, I think that's a dream of a lot of people, and of course, most people. If you want to do what you want to do, you don't necessarily have to win the lotto. Obviously, that afforded you the opportunity to make your dreams come true a little bit sooner than it would take an average person. But you still have to go out there. You still have to film. You still have to edit. It's not like being a lotto winner automatically you're a great filmmaker. So,
oh, yeah.
How much of...
Yep.
What?
Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Chad was looking at me like he was going to ask a question. How much of the film is done at this point? I figure it's probably you're done filming at this point and you're editing it now?
We have about 85% of it shot right now, and so we have a little bit more to do. And we're actually sending somebody to Africa in a couple months to go to one of the world... this place, it's considered the world capital of voodoo, and we're going to try to... actually witness some possession rituals, which I think... I think it'd be...
Stay away from the pufferfish.
Yeah. Exactly. But
So where did the idea for the Chasing the Shadows movie come from?
I've always had an interest in the paranormal, and, you know, I like a lot of the shows that are on television now having to do with the paranormal and ghosts and stuff. You know, it's fascinating. You just... Some of it, I mean, I'm somewhat of a skeptical person, but some of it, I just wonder how much is real and how much is fake. So that's kind of my inspiration for this film. It's just I really wanted to go out and do it and go into some of these haunted places and meet some of these experts and scientists and, you know, spiritual leaders and just really go out there and do it and see how much is real and how much is fake.
Have you met a lot of people that you were under the impression that this was going to be kind of an expert in the field, and then afterwards you're thinking, this guy's full of shit? This is-
Yeah, well, you know, I have met a few people like that, but, you know, I've also been shocked at some of the things that we have found that are just amazing. For instance, our lead paranormal investigator that we've been following throughout some of this time is Christopher Moon. He has this radio device that talks to spirits. So you can see it on the trailer at boldheadentertainment.com. But, you know, it's just, and it's not like, well, I think that might have said something. I mean, there are actual voices that come through this box, different voices, male, female, and they say specific things. I mean, we have the thing saying, I call it the thing, but, you know, these voices come through the box, and I have it saying my name multiple times. It says Tim, it says, you know, Timothy, and then it says just these things that just are mind-blowing, I think. So, but
did it make the – I would think that would – and at least for me, it would make the skin on the back of my neck kind of raise up.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, it sure did. I mean, I was in a haunted theater – Once in Central City, Colorado, the Belvedere Theater, and we were using this device, and we have this recorded. There's a spirit that comes on, and he says, well, I was talking to the box, and I said, you know, does anybody know me on the other side? And this voice comes through and says, Mike. And so I said, well, Mike, you know, do you have any messages for me? And he said, get out. And I have this on the box, and that, you know, it sent chills up my spine. I don't know, you know, unless somebody is behind the curtain, so to speak, you know, the wizard behind the curtain with a microphone in a building someplace or a car outside where we go to these places. I mean, unless somebody's doing something like that, I just have no, you know, I'm convinced that it's spirits on there. I don't know.
So how long is the film going to be when it's complete, you think? A couple hours?
Feature-length documentary, yeah. It'll probably be about an hour and a half or so. And
so
we have about...
A final product is an hour and a half. How much raw footage do you need to fill an hour and a half of an actual film?
You would need... Well, a lot less than we have. We have about... We have over 100... We have close to 150 hours right now.
How much storage space is that, and how do you dump that into your system?
Oh, it's terabytes and terabytes. I mean, we have so many different hard drives here, and we're shooting in high definition, and some of it goes, we shoot on these things called P2 cards, so it's actually shooting to a, you know, like a miniature hard drive, and then what we do is you just download that into, you know, like a Power Mac, or I think one of the guys uses a PowerBook laptop, and you just, you know, dump the footage on that into a hard drive. So right there.
How are you tracking what's on what? I mean, do you have some kind of a library?
Yeah, that's a huge amount of data.
Yeah. How do you keep track of what's on what?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It can be a headache if you don't, you know, keep up with it, but we have lists, and you just, you just organize it. So,
Once this film, are you going to try to get this released to theaters? Are you going to go direct to DVD? Maybe a internet publishing? You're going to publish it online? How's that going to work?
Our goal right now is to get it shown at a major film festival this coming fall, right around Halloween time. But the film isn't done, so we haven't submitted it to any yet. But, you know, that's our goal, to do the festival route for a little bit. And then eventually, of course, it will go to DVD. But we really want to get it in some of these major festivals. And then, you know, who knows? It could wind up on television as well. It's just too early to tell right now.
Mm-hmm. Are you helping to actually make money with the film, or is that really not what this is about at this point?
That's not what it's about, but of course, you know, I hope to.
Yeah, you're not allergic to making a little profit.
No, not at all. Not at all.
So have you looked into the future, see any other kind of subjects you want to tackle? Is it going to be just documentaries? Are you going to kind of get into fiction as well, or anything like that?
Right now, my main focus is just to stay on this. My main focus right now is just this film, and I want to finish this and do future documentaries. And I'm also thinking about possibly writing a book about lottery winners, but I imagine that would take quite a bit of time.
I think that would be interesting as well. Yeah. Maybe even a documentary, turn the camera around at yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I've thought about if there's a way to make a documentary about lottery winners in a unique way, and it's definitely thinking about it. I don't know.
The one that I saw on the Discovery Channel, my wife was actually watching it, and I came in probably halfway through yours, and that's when I noticed the Max, and that's what I was focusing on, of course, because I've got that very small Neanderthal mind. I can only focus on, me see Max back there.
Apple.
Yeah. Macintosh. I didn't like the documentary from what I saw of it. It kind of focused on the people that I don't think...
The gaudy excess.
Yeah. Uh-huh. The one guy has just, all this crap.
Uh-huh.
And I just thought, wow, this is just so tacky. I have no desire to see this guy's, how much excess this guy has. But you, on the other hand, you actually did something. It's instead of just kind of resting on your laurels and throwing your hands up in the air, you went out and you made your dream come true.
Yeah.
Or you're making your dream come true. So I think a documentary on somebody like you... more focused would be really entertaining.
Oh, well, thanks. Hopefully you're right. Yeah.
Well, we appreciate you coming on and talking about your show, your movie. I'm really looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks a lot for the invite. I love your guys' show, so really appreciate it.
Oh, you don't have to lie. It's not very good.
No, it's great.
But just for that, you're coming back when you release your movie.
All right. Yeah. Sounds good.
there's a huge need, I think, in the Mac world for people to do a lot of video stuff.
Yeah.
So you might want to look at that someday if you ever get the interest, because I think I think a lot of people would be interested in that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
It'd be something I would love to do. I just don't have the time myself.
Uh-huh.
I'm spending all my time right now just trying to redesign the website.
Oh. So, real quick, I'm going to throw this out there just because I just thought about it.
Yeah, sure.
How do you feel like today's technology has contributed to guys like you out there doing independent film?
Well, it's great. This world that we live in, the technology is just getting better and better. You can cheaply make a very professional film. With products just like Final Cut, and it's just it's great. It's fairly easy to do. So,
Kevin Reeves, a independent musician who actually did our theme music that we play every week for us, which is great.
Uh-huh.
He doesn't have a record deal, and he really doesn't want one at this point. We did an interview with him. Oh, about a half a year ago at this point, maybe even longer.
About almost a year ago when he released his first album.
Yeah, his first CD. Uh-huh. And he found, and this is a little bit different than a movie producer, but he can pretty much generate all his business online now. He could sell his product online.
Oh, yeah.
He can market himself online. Uh-huh. There's a huge independent distribution of fans and getting the sound out there. Is that something that you're going to try to take more advantage of?
Oh, yeah.
Kind of build a community around it?
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, we already have quite a bit of people on the film's fan list and so forth, and that's just, mainly generated from the internet. But we're going to be doing a major push to try to, just get the word out there using the internet, and that's another thing you can do fairly cheaply. And there's tons of ways to network on there. And,
people like Rodriguez really seems to be going for the get away from the establishment and kind of make a run of it on your own. Is that kind of your attitude as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, we're outside of Hollywood, and right now we like it that way. We like being independent, and we like maintaining creative control and really putting something out there that's different than everything else. Going against some of the standards and really making something as good as possible, and I don't know. It's fun anyway.
Chasing the Shadows is the name of the movie. You guys can check it out at www.chasingtheshadows.com. I'll put a link up on the show notes. Mm-hmm. His name is Tim Schultz, and he is the man in charge of the film. He's making it happen. Looks really interesting. Thanks a lot for coming on today.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you guys a lot. Take care.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.